Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, France 24, NHK World Radio Japan, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Last weekend saw between 100 and 150,000 people gather at a far-right rally in London. Tommy Robinson, a well-known anti-immigrant leader in the UK, spoke along with Elon Musk, who paid to get Robinson released from jail. Musk told the audience that you either fight back or die. DW correspondent Birgit Maas was at the rally. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
More than 100,000 people have gathered at a far-right rally in London, organized by anti-Islam activist Tommy Robinson. Police say they made several arrests after attempts to breach barriers between the far-right and counter-demonstrators. Now, the protest comes amid growing anti-immigration sentiment in the UK after a summer marked by rising tensions and violence.
Tens of thousands marched through central London under the motto, Unite the Kingdom. Concerns about immigration united many of those taking part, though the event was branded as a free speech festival. The protest was organised by Tommy Robinson, seen by his supporters as an anti-establishment free speech defender. Detractors describe him as a far-right agitator whose rhetoric often targets minority communities and stokes division.
They have attacked the family, they've attacked Christianity, they've opened the borders, they've flooded our nations. They managed to silence us for 20 years with labels. Racist, Islamophobe, far right. They don't work anymore.
The protesters were met by a much smaller group of counter-demonstrators. Some 5,000 people gathered under the banner of the March Against Fascism.
DW correspondent Birgit Maas was at the rally in London and she joins us now. Birgit, you were there, you spoke to the protesters. What did you hear?
Yeah, I spoke to several protesters, and what I heard was that there was a feeling that migrants are in some way prioritized, so a perceived threat by migrants, even though in the official crime statistics, violent crime has been falling in the last decades, while the migration figures have been rising. But nevertheless, there is a feeling that the migration has gone too far, that not more people should be let into the country. And when it comes to crime, there have been some high-profile cases, the so-called grooming gangs, that's several years ago, but there was a lot of press about them. Men of mostly South Asian origin had abused underage girls, and that had gotten a lot of press, and also more recently because there was an inquiry around it. So these cases were cited by those people that I spoke to, but also the subject of free speech, that there was a perception that when you express right-wing views online that you are censored more than people who are expressing left-wing views.
And there was this figure, central figure, Tommy Robinson, who organized the rally. For people who are not familiar with him and his place in the UK scene, what more do we know about him?
He's a very well-known far-right activist here in the UK, very divisive. He expresses views against Islam. He said about Islam, it's a psychological problem. He's been jailed also several times. He's not very popular, according to opinion polls here in the UK. He is, however, supported by Elon Musk. And that is significant. Elon Musk also via video link, had a speech at the demo and was calling even for the dissolution of parliament. And I have to say, all this does have effect on the Muslim community. I was in touch with several women today who were wearing headscarves, and they said they would definitely avoid central London. So the Muslim community in the UK is sizable, around 7% of the population, and demonstrations like this do have an effect on people, that's for sure. Polarization is really increasing. There were some protesters from the left, but not that many. But this was a very big march, and it was preceded also by another summer of protest. So we have seen the number of people coming via what's called small boats, or coming via the English Channel in inflatables. We have seen those numbers rising. So they are not very high when you compare them with overall migration figures. But I think it's significant that governments, the last Conservative governments, but also the new Labour government, they have promised to decrease those numbers, but it hasn't happened. So the numbers have been rising, and I think there, for people who find this problematic, there is a feeling that there is no control over the borders. And as a result, we have seen more protests against accommodation for migrants, and also a fairly new phenomenon, the flying of these St. George's flags, these English flags in smaller towns in England, across the country. I've also seen it myself around London. And these flags were definitely, a lot of these flags were seen there today. So that's sort of crystallizing this protest movement.
Birgit Maas in London, thank you for that update.
That interview and report were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, and most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, France 24. First, a press review from this morning when close to 1 million people in France are expected to protest government cuts to public spending and politicians. Then press reviews as the Israeli military has stepped up its bombing raids in Gaza City and insistence that all Palestinians leave the area at once. There was overwhelming support for a two-state solution and ceasefire at the UN General Assembly. A new United Nations inquiry has found that a genocide has unfolded in Palestine. France 24.
Starting off, of course, with those French strikes planned nationwide, already kicking in, aren't they, Dipti?
Yeah, that's right. Up to 900,000 people expected to protest across France today. This over general discontent and proposed cuts to public spending. All sectors are affected. This is indeed what the communist paper L'Humanité says on its front page. This protest movement really over a host of issues: the budget, pensions, salaries, jobs, but also fiscal equality. That's what it says on its front page. The Catholic paper La Croix on its front page talks about this social malaise or a social unease that is here in France. The paper says in its editorial here that it's too early to tell if this Thursday will be a turning point in the social and political history of France. But it says, wasn't the French Revolution also sparked by an impasse over the budget? So there are some comparisons to be drawn there, at least for La Croix. From the right-wing papers, this is Le Figaro here on its front page, of course, talking about unions putting pressure on the French Prime Minister, Sébastien Lecornu. But in its editorial, the paper warns that France is on the brink of a breakdown right now.
And how are the papers reacting to the major IDF ground offensive in Gaza? That's what we're starting with, Elitza.
Yes, Stuart. Well, the right-wing Israeli paper, the Jerusalem Post, here announces the protracted ground invasion of Gaza City with around 130,000 1,000 soldiers called up, and the paper cites an army spokesman who said that it will likely take several months to gain full control of the city. And a Spanish center-left El País also reports on the issue here on its front page, but this time on the Palestinians in the enclave. And the title here reads, Persevere until the end. And that's a quote from a Palestinian in the enclave. And Le Monde also focuses on what is happening in Gaza City as this ground invasion begins. It says that more than 10,000 children in Gaza City need treatment for severe malnutrition, according to UNICEF.
Alyssa's found as well some opinion pieces. Take us through them, Alyssa.
Yeah, I want to focus on this one here by Israeli left-wing Haaretz. It's written by Ahmad Tibi. He's a Palestinian-Israeli politician. And the title here, The Banality of Evil, takes the concept of the philosopher Hannah Arendt and applies it to what's currently happening in the Gaza Strip. Tibi writes that the Israeli public is witnessing an ethnic cleansing and the total destruction of the Gaza Strip, but the Israelis remain silent. And he says that history will not forgive, adding that despite the historical trauma lived by the Jewish society, people in Israel are turning a blind eye to what's currently happening.
There was overwhelming support for a two-state solution at the United Nations General Assembly.
Is adopted.
142 member states said yes to the New York Declaration. This non-binding resolution calls for the Palestinian Authority to govern and control all Palestinian territory. It proposes an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, release of all hostages, and the establishment of a viable and sovereign Palestinian state.
I want to thank the overwhelming majority of nations that voted for the endorsement of this declaration and the yearning of almost everyone, the international community, to open the door for the option of peace.
The declaration was also one of the strongest criticisms of Hamas by the UN. It said that the militant group must not only end its rule in Gaza, but it condemns the attacks committed by Hamas against civilians. Israel and key ally the United States were among the 10 countries that opposed the resolution.
This is not diplomacy. It is theater, a carefully staged performance for headlines, not for peace. It doesn't shorten the war, it prolongs it. It does not weaken Hamas, it rewards them.
The U.S. called the resolution a misguided and ill-timed publicity stunt. The vote comes days before a U.N. meeting of world leaders, where it's expected some Western countries, including France, will declare the recognition of a Palestinian state. But the presence of the Palestinian Authority at this meeting will be severely curtailed. The White House has already refused to grant a visa to its president, Mahmoud Abbas, and 80 other Palestinian officials.
As Israel's ground operation in Gaza City expands, a new UN inquiry finds there's mounting evidence that a genocide in the enclave is unfolding.
The goal of the Israeli government is abundantly clear as we continue to witness the destruction of Palestinians in Gaza. The Commission finds it is genocide. Today we witness in real time how the promise of never again is broken and tested in the eyes of the world. The ongoing genocide in Gaza is a moral outrage and a legal emergency.
The Commission found Israel has committed four of the five acts against Palestinians laid out in the UN Genocide Convention, which was adopted in the wake of the Holocaust. The report cites statements from Israel's president, prime minister, and former defense minister as direct evidence of genocidal intent. The latest findings from the UN inquiry were slammed by Israel as a one-sided attack on the country.
Israel categorically rejects the libelous rant published today by this commission of inquiry. It spreads the malicious genocide narrative regarding the data coming out of Gaza. It is coming out of the Hamas Ministry of Information or Ministry of Health, and this is a Hamas organ, and I do not believe the figures.
While the pushback from Israel was expected, the latest UN inquiry joins a growing litany of genocide scholars and independent NGOs who've also come to the conclusion that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza.
Those press reviews and reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as on a YouTube channel called France 24 English, and most podcast sites. On to NHK World Radio Japan. The U.S. military has deployed a new mid-range Tomahawk missile system in Japan. An interim government is being formed in Nepal, with Sushila Karki appointed prime minister following days of deadly youth protest. As of Tuesday, Japanese automakers face a U.S. tariff reduced to 15%. Chinese manufacturers are rapidly expanding electric vehicle production in Brazil and Latin America. Ukraine conducted massive drone strikes against Russia, striking a major petroleum refinery in Leningrad. NHK Japan.
The U.S. military has deployed a new mid-range missile system in Japan to bolster deterrence. The Typhoon system is now at the U.S. Marine Corps Air Station Iwakuni in Yamaguchi Prefecture. It is capable of firing Tomahawk cruise missiles from the ground.
It's a truck-based trailer-loaded system that is able to be employed throughout rugged and austere positions. The Typhoon system behind me here, which you see, is purpose-built for one of these effects that we create in the land and sea domain.
The deployment is part of joint exercises with Japan's self-defense forces that started last Thursday. The drills are aimed at coordinating maneuvers for the defense of Japan's remote islands. The Typhoon system can launch missiles with a range of 1,600 kilometers. That means from Iwakuni, they could reach the East China Sea and parts of China. China produces and deploys a large number of ground-launched mid-range missiles. Estimates place its stockpile at over 1,800 missiles. But the U.S. did not possess such missiles under a treaty with the former Soviet Union signed in the final phase of the Cold War. The treaty expired, and the U.S. sped up the development of the Typhoon system. Last year, it deployed the system in the Philippines, a first for the Indo-Pacific region. China says it resolutely rejects the missile system's deployment. Russia has also criticized the U.S. for what it called a destabilizing act. An interim government is being formed in Nepal after recent deadly protests rocked the Himalayan nation led to the ousting of the prime minister. Interim Prime Minister Sushila Karki unveiled on Monday three new cabinet ministers, including the finance and interior ministers, to her interim government. Local media described the three ministers as being in favor of reform and anti-corruption measures. The calls by the young protesters to end corruption and for policies to address the country's wealth gap have likely been taken into account.
She was on the side of the youths. I hope like there's some improvements than before.
The previous government's move to block social media platforms in the country sparked deadly protests earlier in September. The demonstrations led to the dissolution of the parliament.
Turning to U.S. tariffs, as of Tuesday, Japan's automakers now face a lower rate of 15% in line with a bilateral agreement. But that's still much higher than before U.S. President Donald Trump took office, leaving them with a heavy burden. The duty replaces a 25% levy that was imposed on Japanese vehicles by the Trump administration in April. That was on top of a previous 2.5% tariff, which is included in the new rate. The reduced tariff somewhat eases the cost for Japan's automakers, but many are warning that it will take a bite out of their operating profits. Companies are now brainstorming strategies to stay competitive in the important U.S. market. China's electric vehicle makers are expanding in the world's sixth largest car market. They are looking to sell popular plug-in hybrids and other EV models in Brazil, which has more than 210 million people. NHK World's Rafael Nogueira has more.
China's Guangzhou Automobile Group started Brazil sales in May. It plans to increase revenue by introducing five models, including EVs. China-based BYD is also stepping up its presence in Brazil after surpassing US-based Tesla as the world's largest EV maker. BYD entered the market in 2022 and sold about 76,000 vehicles there last year, tripling the 2023 total. The company's market share is approaching those of Japan-based Nissan and Honda for all types of cars in Brazil. Chinese makers combined have a dominant position in Brazil's market for EVs.
Ukraine's military has conducted massive drone attacks against Russia after Moscow sent drones into the airspace of Ukrainian neighbors. Concerns are mounting tensions in the region could rise further. Ukraine's General Staff of the Armed Forces announced on Sunday drones struck an oil refinery in the northwestern Russian region of Leningrad. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky thanked the country's soldiers for inflicting huge losses on Russia. Russia's defense ministry said its forces had shot down more than 360 Ukrainian drones. The Ukrainian Air Force said the Russians attacked with a missile and more than 50 unmanned aerial vehicles, including drones.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, like three subscribers did this week, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Your donations are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which is supplied without cost to more than 100 radio stations across the globe. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has approved the expansion of illegal West Bank settlements. The Israeli military raided the home of West Bank filmmaker who won an Oscar for his documentary film No Other Land. Israel killed at least 9 Yemeni journalists last week. United Nations Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese said the current Israeli assault on Gaza City is a case of ethnic cleansing. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has approved a plan to dramatically expand illegal West Bank settlements, greenlighting the construction of 3,400 new homes on land that Palestinians want for a future state. The expansion into what Israel calls the E1 area would link occupied East Jerusalem to the large Adyom settlement, dividing the West Bank, further isolating Palestinian communities. Netanyahu spoke at a signing ceremony. He said, "We said that there would be no Palestinian state, and we say it again, there will not be a Palestinian state. This place is ours. We will take care of our country and our security and our biblical heritage." In the occupied West Bank, the Israeli army raided the home of a Palestinian activist and filmmaker, Basil Adra, who won an Oscar for the documentary No Other Land. Adra said, "The police and army came when the settlers were attacking us. They did not stop the settlers. One of the settlers chased one of the solidarity activists, and he beat them on the ground. The soldiers were watching. They didn't do anything." Film No Other Land documents efforts by settlers to forcibly displace Adra's community in the area known as Maser Lata. The International Federation of Journalists has condemned Israel for killing at least 9 Yemeni journalists in a strike last week, targeting the offices of a newspaper controlled by the Houthi government in Sana'a. Some reports say as many as 25 journalists were killed in that airstrike. The IFJ, the International Federation of Journalists, General Secretary Anthony Bellinger said, "Targeting journalists is a grave violation of international law and an attack on the public's right to know." Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur for the Occupied Palestinian Territories, warns that Israel's ongoing assault on Gaza City aims to make the area uninhabitable as part of a broader plan of ethnic cleansing. Speaking in Geneva, Albanese said the Israeli regime is employing unconventional weapons in a desperate attempt to forcibly evacuate Palestinians from Gaza City. She said this is the last place of Gaza that needs to be rendered unlivable before advancing the ethnic cleansing of that piece of land. UN experts said that Israel's offensive on Gaza's largest urban center, Gaza City, amounts to full destruction. It's happening already. It's not that this is a future, an uncertain event, destroying entire neighborhoods, remnants of buildings where people were seeking shelter. UN expert Francesca Albanese stated that the offensive is not about securing territory, but about erasing the viability of people to live in that area. The ongoing assault is to take place the last remnant of Gaza and will only devastate the Palestinians, but also endanger the remaining captives in Israel. Calling the offensive unlawful, the UN expert said that Israel has no legal right to continue its military presence in Gaza. Albanese cited the International Court of Justice, the advisory opinion requiring that Israel dismantle the settlements, which are considered illegal by international law, withdraw its troops, stop exploiting Palestinian resources, pay reparations, and facilitate the return of displaced Palestinians. In her remarks, the UN Special Rapporteur also said that the ongoing genocide in Gaza is not only Israel's crime alone, but rather a crime by the entire world. She said that many states continue to normalize the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza and even permit from the war the unabated arms trade and diplomatic engagement with Tel Aviv. She called this a collapse of the international criminal order, where those who oppose the genocide are silenced and criminalized.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well most of the time at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You will have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for the show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.